weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the U of I.
And I'm Steve Nesbitt, professor of climate, meteorology, and atmospheric sciences at the U of I.
1,300-mile Navigator pipeline will run through five Midwestern states, including 13 counties in Illinois.
John Feltham farms on 222 acres of land outside Williamsfield in Knox County.
Roughly 1/2 mile of ground. It's going to pass through one more inlet.
Environmentalists are pushing for some new protections for landowners when it comes to CO2 pipelines.
The issue of carbon capture and storage underground has sparked debate across Illinois, especially around the Mahomet Aquifer, which spans from Iroquois County to Cass County and is the primary source of water for more than 800,000 Illinois residents.
Today on Weather Realness, we're talking all about carbon capture and storage.
That's right. That's a mouthful. But let me introduce this topic as a meteorologist by trade. So we look at observing and improving the representation of extreme weather in models so we can better predict extreme storms and rainfall. However, on the other side of the coin, as we've discussed in prior episodes, we do know that climate change is changing the water cycle on our planet. Of course, the million-dollar question then becomes, how is that going to impact our weather? Physics tells us that air holds about 7% more moisture per degree Celsius of warming. But interestingly, climate scientists are finding that the atmosphere responds to this additional heat and moisture by producing more downpours, yet also droughts in response. Of course, we can do things to adapt to more rainfall extremes, like putting in a sump pump, better gutters on our homes, as well as building better stormwater systems, planting different crops that can handle droughts, and building infrastructure to mitigate things like coastal flooding. But problems like running short of groundwater are obviously more difficult to solve. Adaptation to these changes is very expensive, into the trillions of dollars. Ultimately, climate change will have a big impact on our economy well into the future. Scientists and engineers have long asked, what if there are solutions that can offset our emissions of carbon dioxide? We call this climate change mitigation, technologies that can help reduce the effects of carbon emissions while we transition to cleaner sources of energy. In this show, we're going to discuss how we might mitigate the impacts of carbon emissions. This is through technologies that are often cheaper than the ultimate projected impacts of the damage climate change will cause. The specific technology we'll discuss today is called carbon capture. Later, Maddie will be joined by Trent Ford to talk about the different types of carbon capture.
It's also important to stress that pulling carbon out of the atmosphere isn't the only climate solution. Ultimately, reducing our dependence on fuels that release carbon dioxide into the atmosphere is a potential solution. And of course, burning fossil fuels are the big culprit here. But if it works, carbon capture is a step to help us mitigate the impacts of fossil fuel emissions in a changing climate. To learn more about why we need to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, we're talking with Donald Wubbles, a professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Welcome, Don. Thank you for joining us.
Sure. Good to meet you, Manny.
So, Don, can you tell us a bit about your background in climate science and climate policy?
I've been studying the atmosphere for over 50 years. My first 2 degrees actually were in electrical engineering here at the University of Illinois. Then I went to NOAA and then to Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and I finished my PhD in atmospheric sciences in 1983. But I've been working on studying the atmosphere and climate change for over 50 years now.
So, Don, what is carbon dioxide, starting with the basics?
Okay. So carbon dioxide is a basic chemical in the atmosphere. We actually emit carbon dioxide when we breathe in oxygen. It combines through our bodies with carbon in our body, and we breathe out carbon dioxide. Plants breathe in carbon dioxide and then emit oxygen. So we're in quite a relationship to maintain what were natural levels on the Earth's surface. So in normal times, when we're not in an ice age, the normal level of carbon dioxide is about 300 parts per million. That means 300 molecules per million molecules of air. So it doesn't sound like very much, but in fact, it's very important because carbon dioxide is one of those gases, like water vapor and several other gases, methane and some others, that are what are called greenhouse gases. And they absorb radiation emitted back from the Earth's surface. So what happens, what's called the greenhouse effect, was first discovered in the 1820s by a very famous scientist named Fourier. Anybody in physics like you would know what Fourier series and Fourier transforms and things like that are. Well, Fourier also discovered the greenhouse effect. And what it means is that when the sun mostly emits ultraviolet and visible radiation, and that comes to the Earth, and some of that, is a small amount, is reflected to space by clouds and other aspects in the atmosphere, and the rest is absorbed by the Earth's surface. And because of the temperature of our planet, that radiation gets re-emitted in infrared wavelengths. And because of these greenhouse gases, we don't have a frozen planet, because they absorb that radiation. The fact that temperature decreases with altitude is kind of key to this. And so they absorb that radiation, re-emit it, and it's like a blanket on the Earth's surface. The problem is human activities have increased that natural amount of carbon dioxide from 300 parts per million to now over 420 parts per million. And as a result, it's like adding another blanket on the Earth's surface. So the Earth has to warm. Mm-hmm. And that's the basics of what we call climate change.
So a recent U.S. Department of Energy report suggested that carbon dioxide is not as large of a concern as previous research has shown. What are your thoughts on this report?
The report put up by five contrarians, I know all of them very, very well. I've argued with all of them many times over the years, I don't remember exactly how long it was, like 60 pages or so. Just today, the science community came up with one of its responses. This is just one put together by about 80 scientists. And it's 460-page response saying that basically that DOE report was largely garbage, that every aspect of it could be argued with. And there's nothing in it that one should be paying attention to. However, these contrarians have had their day in the sun, because the media tends to treat this as meaning that climate change is uncertain. And yet that's not what the science says at all. The science has become very, very clear in the last decade that climate change is one of the most important issues facing humanity. And we need to all be taking this very seriously.
Another recent piece of news from the Trump administration recently announced funding cuts to NOAA's Mau Lau Observatory in Hawaii, which is the longest-running carbon dioxide observatory established, incidentally, in 1948 by Illinois chemistry grad Charles Keeling. There are also plans to end NASA's only two U.S. orbiting carbon observatories, which measure carbon dioxide and plant growth around the globe. How will these changes impact climate science?
Although I have a huge impact on us, including our weather prediction. And that's what most people don't seem to realize, that these observations, the Mauna Loa Observatory has been key not only in measuring carbon dioxide, but also in measuring many other gases and other aspects of our system that allow us to better understand how our weather is changing. On top of that, the satellites you talk about not only measure carbon dioxide, they also do other measurements, effects of aerosols, particles in the atmosphere. Those particles affect our weather systems as well as having long-term effects on climate like carbon dioxide does. So it's going to be a huge impact on the American people, because the net cost of these satellites, these observations at Mauna Loa, are minute compared with the impact they have on our lives.
So could this, for example, affect our ability to forecast severe weather, for example?
Certainly will have an impact on severe weather because of the, as I mentioned, the impact of aerosols, the particles in the atmosphere, it has a huge impact on reflectivity of sunlight, on and then affects the weather system directly as a result. You kind of see these effects when we have a large wildfire, and such has been happening in Canada, and then we get the impacts here in Illinois. So it not only affects our weather, it affects our health through impacts on air quality as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So kind of going back to this call from the IPCC to remove so much carbon from the atmosphere, can you define for us what a carbon offset is?
Carbon offset is a way of trying to compensate for the fact that you're like flying in an airplane and you want to do that, you know, whether it's for business or pleasure. And so people will buy an offset to be able to build, add more trees to major forests. Trees absorb carbon. And so the aim is to try to offset what you're emitting. What has often been the case, though, is that these offsets have not been reliable and, in fact, have been almost something that's criminal in the way that they've been used. So some are very legitimate and others are not, and that's been the real problem with them.
So if someone is kind of wants to offset some of their carbon activity, how would they go about finding the carbon offsets that are actually beneficial to the environment?
So if you're, you look at what the non-government organizations are doing, the legitimate ones like the Nature Conservancy or Environmental Defense Fund and others that we can rely upon. The airlines themselves tend to have offsets available, and those offsets are generally been checked out and are legitimate. But just be careful.
What is a carbon credit?
You're going a little bit outside my expertise, but I've known all these things in the past. Carbon credit is that you do something that gives you a credit for having reduced carbon in the atmosphere. So perhaps you replace a large source of fossil fuel use with something that doesn't use any fossil fuels, then you can get a credit for that.
And how do they incentivize or de-incentivize businesses to reduce carbon emissions?
Well, I don't think we do enough with that, and particularly with this administration. But, a carbon credit can, help a company because they can, it's more than they're just doing their part, but they're also helping the country overall. And we've had in the past with some of the laws we've passed in the last decade is that doing things that produce a carbon credit actually results in savings for the money, for the company.
You're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about Illinois climate and weather. We're talking about mitigating the impacts of carbon emissions with Donald Wubbles, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Science at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He served as assistant director with the Office of Science and Technology Policy in President Barack Obama's administration. How does carbon offset sort of fit into the whole picture of how to move forward in climate change?
Well, carbon credits will never do enough. That's the problem. We need to go from basically the 37 plus gigatons of carbon dioxide emitted every year to zero. Mm-hmm. And even to get to a leveling of the climate, so accept the fact that the past climate has changed and we're not going to see more, we had to reduce the emissions by over 20 gigatons. So we got to have a huge reduction in emissions if we're going to try to slow down the changes in climate.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk with some experts in the next segment about different technological and biological ways to capture carbon. But sort of from your perspective and your experience, what ways do you think are going to be really beneficial moving forward?
Well, I think carbon capture is one of the solutions. When we talk about climate change, we always say that there's no magic bullet. There's no one thing that's going to solve this and keep humanity from being greatly impacted in the future. And so, but there's a whole lots of things. So it's like a buckshot or, you know, a shotgun level of different solutions that will come together. So carbon capture is one of those. And whether it's burying carbon being emitted, say, from a power plant or from a large industry, and not allowing that carbon to go in the atmosphere, or trying to capture carbon out of the atmosphere and then do something else with it. The problem with particularly the latter approach is that economically it's not very feasible right now. And so it's going to be very difficult to meet those kind of reductions that you were talking about earlier. And those reductions, by the way, that IPCC talked about, assume that we were already taking major actions to reduce emissions. And right now, we just had an increase in emissions this last year, and we're continuing to increase emissions overall globally. The U.S. has been had a slight reduction, but globally, we need to have a huge reduction in emissions by 2050 to meet that need of only removing 6 gigatons of carbon from the atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, it's much easier to just not emit the carbon than to pull it back out of the atmosphere. So you talked a little bit about economic challenges that, you know, some of these carbon offsets, carbon credits are not economically feasible. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
We can do a lot by adding more trees to the planet. There's no question of that. You can't do enough. You can't eliminate the problem by adding trees. So what people have tried to do is say, well, there's other ways that you can kind of try to compensate for carbon. And some of those do very little in terms of reducing the net carbon impact. So it's really a matter of looking at all the different individual approaches, and you know, some are certainly more viable than others.
So, you know, removing carbon from the atmosphere is the theme of this episode, but, you know, the name of the show is Weather Realness. So how does, you know, carbon removal, how does that matter for weather?
Over the last century, we've seen a significant change in climate. Current temperatures are higher than they've been in well over 1,000 years. Amount of carbon in the atmosphere is equivalent to what it was about 2 or 3 million years ago. And that was a much, much warmer Earth. And we know from many past analyses that there's a strong correlation between the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and the temperature. That's been very clearly showed in paleo climate analysis. We're very likely heading for a much larger change in climate over the coming decades. It takes, you know, quite a few decades before you really see the full impact of the changes in carbon that you've put into the atmosphere. So the carbon we're emitting today won't really see its maximum effect for at least 30 years, and actually much longer than that if you take into account the effects on ice in Greenland and Antarctica, for example. That takes centuries. So we're having an impact, and we're going to have a much more significant impact over the next few decades.
That's all we have time for today, but thank you so much, John, for joining us. Appreciate you.
Okay, thank you.
Donald Wubbles is the Harry E. Preble Professor Emeritus in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. He joined us today to talk about carbon emissions and carbon capture. You're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate. I'm Maddie Stover.
And I'm Steve Nesbitt, head and professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois.
Have a weather or climate question you want us to tackle? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. Coming up next, we'll continue the conversation around carbon capture.
Illinois Public Media News. This is who we are. Central Illinois is our home and our focus. From Champaign County's most listened to newscasts and conversations that bring the state together. The future will bring changes, but it won't change who we are. Illinois Public Media News on WILL AM and IPMNewsroom.org.